You're listening
to Welcome to Comics, episode number 321. This week, we talk about Transformers, Last Stand of the Wreckers. Visit WelcomeToComics.com, hear past episodes, see what we're reading next, or send us feedback. This show is supported by listeners like you. Access bonus episodes by becoming a patron today at patreon.com/WelcomeToComics. And now, the cast begins.
Excited to know who our guest host is?
I'm curious, yeah.
Yeah, it's an 80s expert.
I'm really curious who that is. I mean, I'm pretty well versed in the 80s. Oh yeah. My god. This is amazing. I saw that little RoboCop and I was like, oh, I know who it is.
I told David that we had a special guest, somebody to tell him who, and so I told him and Jen that our special guest was an 80s expert. Oh, man, I lit up and texted you, and I forgot that heavy furniture for your Thor.
Oh, my God. I still have your Counselor Troy mug.
I have your Rex.
Yeah, see, we have a bunch of things we have to...
Counselor Troy mug? I need to see a picture of this. Right,
yes, you do. I post it on Twitter.
Does it have knockers on it? Is that what's going on?
That's straight where your mind goes.
Well, I mean... Listen, all right, when my parents used to watch TNG, like, I think my mom referred to her as the one with the Hooters, okay? So, like, I mean? Like,
there are quite a few episodes where they're on display, like, up in the middle of the night with a sheer top.
Yeah, she's not exactly... They didn't do much to hide that.
I think, if I recall, this cup is actually one where she was wearing the real godforsaken uniform.
Yeah, she is wearing an actual uniform.
She's wearing an actual science officer's uniform like she fucking should be.
Are we recording, or are we still just bullshitting?
No, we're already recording, and we're actually even already streaming on Twitch. So if you go to twitch.tv/jollyandy, we'll be there. And by the way, I auto-host you, J-Money, so...
Oh, sweet.
Yeah, so if all our right. listeners can't tell you, Jen is not here. She has gotten... She's got the monster-in-law in town, so she's unavailable until next week. So what we were already planning on doing it anyway is calling in J-Money, who is our resident 80s expert. He's, aside from being a buddy of mine, for a long time, you legitimately are a streamer of retro games from like way back. You were into old stuff, so I consider you as close as I can get to an 80s expert without like calling up some random college in North Dakota to get somebody on. So I'm going to do that. You are an 80s expert.
Is there a school in North Dakota that like specializes in 80s studies or something?
I just figure that's where it'd be because you would need some random specialty like that to get motherfuckers to come out to North Dakota.
I suppose that's true.
It's probably a publicly funded college, so it's probably a bullshit degree. So, what
are you gonna do? Hey, that's where I work. One of those places.
Wait, did I say public or am I private? Those stupid ones where you have to pay like way too much money.
Oh, like where my Phoenix wife got her college degree.
Well, hey. I think my wife has one of those too. So
hey, there you go. Yeah. But yeah. We brought you on, J-Money, because we were doing a trio of nostalgia stuff. And I wanted to talk about this stuff because, like, I had read Ready Player One, and I kind of enjoyed it, but there was some stuff that bugged me. And they made the movie, and the reviews were like, this is enjoyable, but the stuff that bugged people in the reviews for the movie were the same that bugged me about the book. Have either one of you guys seen the movie, Ready Player One?
I have seen the movie and read the book, yeah.
Okay.
I neither, which I guess that doesn't diminish my 80s...
No, it makes you a hipster. You're not going to watch the nostalgia craze. You're going to do the real thing.
No, exactly. Yeah, don't go just trying to absorb all of the 80s in one movie.
Yeah. But anyway.
Well, it's like the movie cut a lot out of the book because the book would have made it would have been a much longer movie. But the thing about the movie is it wasn't so... it wasn't 80s focused in the same way that the book was. There was a lot of newer references. Like, Tracer from Overwatch
appears. Yeah, I saw that in the trailer.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw a lot of stuff where it was like, oh god, there's just too much stuff going on here.
Yeah.
It wasn't really that I wasn't interested in watching it. It's just, one, I would have found nobody who would want to watch it with me. And two, it just looked really busy, and it was just like, yeah, you know, it's a pretty good movie. So I was just like, I don't really just spend money. I don't spend $12 on just an all right movie. I don't know.
This is what, I thought the movie was enjoyable, but it wasn't like a good movie, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't think you're missing anything by not watching it in the theater.
Okay. But I mean, what I found the conversation coming up, and then what I was when I was talking to people about it, and the kind of thing I had with it, is there's things about the book at least that were a good story, good carry through, decent character development stuff in there, and good twists on characters too. But a lot of the books seem to be carried by nostalgia, like, oh hey, I remember that thing from the 80s too, so cool, or I recognize that thing. And some of the reviews are positive because it's people who are into that, and some of them are really scathing because they think that the only inlet to the book or the only inlet to the movie is if you're into this 80s crap, and it's nostalgia driven and it's hashtag brands and it's just worshiping an idea of a brand. So I wanted to do like these 80s comics that are not necessarily revivals, but like, you know, IDW owns Transformers, IDW owns TMNT, and the G.I. Joe one we're going to read in a couple weeks too, I think is written by the original creator of G.I. Joe.
I don't know if Larry Hama created G.I. Joe,
but the original author for the comics, right?
He wrote like over 100 ish. He wrote it for like a decade.
And so I want to do some of this stuff to see like these old brands, these old characters that we like to a certain degree. It doesn't matter what universe you're writing in, so long as you write a good story. But can making it Transformers, can making it G.I. Joe, can making it Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles add to the story in a way that like you couldn't if it wasn't one of these, you know, like all the people who are hating on Ready Player One because it's hashtag brands, like, okay, but just because it isn't a nostalgia brand doesn't mean it's bad necessarily, or doesn't mean it's hashtag brands in a negative way. You can write a good story in these genres that you can't in other genres. So anyway, that's the discussion I want to have. But first, do you guys want to just talk about this week's comic before we get into the big thing?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
This week's comic.
This week we read Transformers Last Stand of the Wreckers. This is a 5-issue miniseries from, I don't know, sometime a while ago. But IDW has owned Transformers for a while now. And a couple of years ago, they did a big push to reinvigorate. And IDW, I think, does a good job of picking up brands and picking up, not necessarily brands, but picking up properties that otherwise wouldn't get play anymore and keep them alive. I think Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles might have gone to the wayside, but IDW keeps them alive. And IDW does a good job of putting out good content in these properties that that would otherwise get just lost. And I think Transformers is one of the ones that I've always heard good things about, so I wanted to pick it up. And Last Stand of the Wreckers tends to be one that gets a lot of positive reviews. I went a bunch of like Googling what is best IDW Transformers comic, and Last Stand of the Wreckers was number one on all of them. So there's some stuff in here that I have no context for because I haven't read the other IDW stuff. But I think this did a pretty good job of being standalone with this 5 issues. Like, I got a good story out of this.
Yeah, and I could probably maybe provide some context for some of the characters just because they appear like in old toy lines and in the old cartoon and in the all sorts of stuff. And in the old movie, like, I noticed there's a bunch of characters in here from like the old 86 like animated movie.
Oh really?
Yeah. So for me too, like when I was a kid in the 80s and the early 90s, I really enjoyed Transformers. But my knowledge doesn't go much past the show, the original G1 show. Well, and also, Transformers Rescue Bots, which my kids love. So, you know, it's a very young child-friendly Transformers show.
I'm fairly certain back in the day I watched more Beast Wars than I did Transformers.
Oh yeah, I watched a lot of Beast Wars too. Now that you mentioned that, I do remember watching Beast Wars.
I had buddies who were into Beast Wars, and I couldn't get behind the clunky computer animation. I don't know why. It bothered me even back then, and it was brand new then.
It certainly has not stood the test of time. No, and it doesn't have the charm as some shows from that era did, like Reboot. Did you guys ever watch Reboot?
Oh yeah, Reboot's delightful.
Or fucking Gargoyle.
Huh? Anyway. Gargoyles?
Yes.
Okay, anyways, Transformers. Anyway.
We're talking about computer animation, Andy. Come on.
I just want to talk about other cartoons I remember watching.
Remember the Mighty Ducks cartoon? The one where they're like actual ducks and they're playing hockey and they're also fighting crime in there?
Yeah. Oh, fuck yeah. We should watch that for the show. No, this is comics. Oh, this is comics. This is comics.
Don't do it.
Don't do it. Tailspin. So I will say, because I wasn't as familiar with the characters and stuff from anything, what I immediately had a hard time doing getting into this was identifying who was who. And they did a good job. So I think by about the end of issue 2, the beginning of issue 3, I had a handle on who was who mostly. But even then, when there was a bunch of them in the room, like, they're all just big robots and they kind of start looking the same a little bit. And like, where does one start and the other one end? and the art does a good job of trying to keep it straight. And when they're not like crowded in the cockpit of their ship, it's a lot easier. Like when they're on the battlefield, it's easy to tell who's who. But when they're crowded together, I'm like, who was this, the turtle looking dude with the history thing? Or was this the guy with the gun on his back? I don't remember. Is this Guzzle? Yeah. Guzzle's the one with the gun? I don't know. I remember Rotor Storm because he's terrible. The one who got shot in the fucking face.
Yeah. Oh, man. Did he eat it? Oh, man.
So some of these I'm able to tell, but some of them not as much.
So, the veterans, if you have, like, first of all, if you ever seen Transformers the movie, like, almost every single one of the veterans is, like, from that, if you ever remember that.
Ultra Magnus,
Perceptor, even Springer. He's like, I don't know, he's got like some weird famous line where he's like, I didn't come here to die or something. Like, he's that guy. Like, he was hanging out with the chick Transformer like the whole time.
And Cup is in the crappy Michael Bay, the latest one where they have medieval Scotland and the staff of Merlin.
Wow, I've never seen that one.
Cup is in there.
How did you even watch those?
It's terrible. I watched it on the Plex. I had nothing else to do. I like watch random shit in the background at work, and it was there. Now I remember that Cup was in that.
Yeah, Cup's one of my favorites from the 86 movie.
Oh, he's so great, because he's like that hardened, grizzled veteran guy with all like the war stories that nobody has time to listen to. Yeah.
Except the Dinobots love hearing them.
Oh, yeah, except for freaking... Yeah.
And then
Grimlock, I'm like, tell me stories. Like, like, shut up, dinosaur guy. Nobody cares.
It's dumb, but one of my favorite moments in this thing was, I think, in issue 4 or 5, when Cup like tells, like, he's gonna go around the corner and knock out a couple of Decepticons, and I think Iron Fist is with him. He's like, here, hold my cigar, and I'll go out and kick their ass. And like, that was a funny moment. I was like, I thought the cigar was part of his face. Like, blew my mind. I was like, what is that? He's just been chewing on like a bolt for 4 issues.
The one thing I've noticed about the IDW stuff is they try and humanize these characters by which they never do in the cartoon, by giving them like cigars and like actual like alcoholic drinks, maybe alcoholic to whatever a Transformer would right. find to be alcoholic, right? Like they do
pure
that
pure unrefined diesel.
Yeah, like seriously, like they do that in the comics. Like I started reading like some of the later stuff, and like I've noticed that too. It's just like one of the guys opens up a bar at one point. It's just like, okay. Nice. Yeah, so they just let the IDW just, I don't, it's something I've only noticed with their stuff. Like, they're just like, yeah, they're just like, you know, they're going to smoke cigars and drink like anybody else, right? Because they're robots. Yeah, I don't know. They do some weird things to humanize them. But yeah, that's like Cup's shtick, is he's got the cigar. But you can tell it's not really a cigar. It's like, looks like a little, like, pipe or something. Like, it's so weird looking. If you like, zoom in on it, it's so funny. Yeah. Oh, man.
That was one of my favorites. The other one that was one of my favorites is the reason I remember Rotor Storm, because when they show up and in front of Overlord and he says, Wreckers combine! And he's like, oh, I thought it was worth a try. I was like, this guy's hilarious. I got to go back and find out what this guy's name is. So before I turned the page, I like went back through the issue to try and figure out what his name was. I was like, oh, okay, that's Rotor Storm. I like Rotor Storm. And then I turned the page forward and he gets shot in the face. And I was like, well, why did I take all that energy? And be like, oh, this is the guy I'm going to root for the next 3 issues.
I feel like that is like That is like the defining moment for this, because they're just like, oh, we got a jokester in the group, huh? Boom! We don't joke in this fucking series. Like, just like, holy shit! Like, and that's it. After that, all humor is gone.
Yeah. Which I feel like that is one of the cornerstone themes of the Transformers franchise. What I remember of it anyway, what I know of it as an adult, is that like it's halfway between Sunday cartoons and Gundam, because Gundam is really heavy on the war is bad, people die, I don't care who you are, right? Like, Gundam's on the far end of like war is bad, okay, spectrum, and this is kind of like somewhere in between. Like, yeah, motherfucker's gonna die and it's gonna get real, you know, but like people do make it out and the Wreckers still exist because some of them are alive still, I guess, kind of. You know, so like this is definitely on that spectrum, but it's very much on the motherfucker's gonna die, this shit's gonna get real side of
it. I always looked at it this way, like if we're talking about war stories, right, Gundam is like real war stories, you know, like a classic war movie kind of thing, only in space and anime and all that stuff.
Yeah.
Transformers is like Hogan's Heroes, you know, it's like wartime with a little shenanigans thrown in, you know. It's like, yeah, you know, it's like not really a super duper serious, but this particular comic decided to take a pretty serious kind of thing. They were like, all right, we're gonna like here's some of that funny, here's the funny guy, right? Okay, boom, his face is gone, that booker's dead.
Yeah,
no one's joking.
Because well, because all four of the newbies get killed, right? Optimus Prime does, like fake Optimus Prime. The turtle history guy, Iron Fist Iron, the Tumblr reblogger.
I think his screen name was Physitron.
Was it Physitron?
Physitron was something else.
Iron
Fist is his real name.
Yeah, but I thought his online handle was Fist Iron. I thought it was just his name backwards.
Oh, maybe it
did
was.
Did I read it wrong? I might have read it wrong. And then there was Gun Guy, which is Guzzle. And is he the one who turns into a tank? I don't know who he turns into.
I think he does.
They say, hey, turn into a tank. And then, like, I was, like, flipping through, and I'm like, wait, did he actually turn into a tank? Like, I don't even think they showed it. That was the weird part. Like, they did a good job, like, downplaying these newbies and then murdering all of them. That's not a spoiler. Do we just shut this thing down now that we've, like...
No, we're going to this assuming everybody's read all this, so...
Yeah, no, well, like, yeah, the newbies... They all know that. Yeah, they were like... Hey, these newbies are hard to tell apart. We're going to kind of like pick them apart a little bit, not really develop them super hard, and we're going to murder all of them.
Iron Fist, though, does get really good story development. Like, Iron Fist goes from a character, you're like, what the fuck is he doing here? And then he has his moment, and then you're like, hey, he's going to live. Oh, no, not really.
Well, I'd say he's the main character.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's kind of the anchor for the whole thing. He does die, but he at least, like, he is the, like, yeah, he's like the underlying... whatever piece, whatever you'd want to call it, other than Overlord.
yeah
Overlord.
It's sort of weird, like they did do a good job of weaving a couple of little subplots through the whole thing, which I thought was pretty nice.
It
was hard to tell some of the characters apart.
Yeah, Iron Fist gets like the Colonel Henry Blake send off though.
Yeah,
anyone, you guys watch MASH?
I know what you're talking about. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so that was, I mean, I feel like that's, okay, so what, you have to clear up for me what exactly, because I didn't understand what police car guy at the end was saying, like, send him out there knowing a suicide, this and that, like, can you guys, like, what was the whole thing with Iron Fist not supposed to be going out, but going out anyway?
He basically had a debilitating disease. He was going to die regardless, right?
Yeah.
So sort of like his Make-A-Wish Foundation.
I
don't know. Okay. That's the best thing I could like describe it as. Really, it was like, "Oh, you hang out with the Wreckers for a day." I'm like, yeah. They're like, why did they send us with a sickly kid? What the hell? And then you realize, like, oh, he really was a sickly kid, and he really is going to die. Oh man.
Yeah, and that's okay. So then that bugs me, because what's police car guy's name?
Prowl, yeah.
Okay, so that makes me hate Prowl, because Prowl goes on a whole thing about how we judged them and I didn't want to, and it's our name getting dragged through the mud. But then you made the decision to send a liability into combat with a team of other people. Like, it's not just Liability who could die. It's the other people who will die because Liability is a liability and will get fucked. Like, probably you're just not the king of good decisions, are you?
It was reverse Saving Private Ryan. It really was. That's amazing. Oh, man. They're just like, hey, here you go. Here's a sickly guy who's going to compromise your whole suicide mission.
Yeah. That's a terrible decision. Like, I don't care if it's Make-A-Wish. Don't do that. The other three people aren't dying. I mean, they did, but not because of that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
They actually, like, earned a spot through, like, military, like, accolades.
Yes.
Like, hey, guys. Yeah. Although, well, you know, like, he didn't do the stupid move of, like, you know, trying to crack a joke in front of Overlord and then getting fucking blasted in the face. Oh my god, that was so brutal.
Yeah, that was a bad one.
I
reread that
tonight and I was just like, wow, that dude's fucking crazy.
Dude, that, and then when Overlord rips Springer's face off.
Yeah, and he's Springer, like, holding it.
Yeah, and he says, sweet. Like, holy shit, you're insane. Like, I knew that before now, but Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah, he's like the Nazi, like, intern camp guy who didn't get the memo that World War II was over, and he's just, like, still going around just murdering dudes and being crazy because he just loves it.
Well,
cool.
I mean, except he's doing it to get the attention of Megatron, which would have never came. And I love it. I didn't get that in the context of this, so I also got the twist at the end where they were like, motherfucker, he's been dead. Like, your life has been worthless.
They're like, what are you doing with your life? Because guess what? Like,
well, and,
war's
and
the, over, man.
And, yeah, and the other side of that is if you hadn't have, like, done this dumbass plan, you could have been, I don't know, ruling right now? Like, if you hadn't have holed up here to try and get, you know, Senpai's infection, like, you could have actually gone out and done something more productive and gotten your own little empire or done something even more malicious than what you're doing. Like, you're sitting here waiting for Senpai to notice you, but no. You just go out and live your life. Do your thing. But
his whole shtick is, and I did a little bit of background on him, too, just because, like, I think this is his first appearance, which is kind of weird. because you think, well, he might have shown up in some earlier stuff, but I wasn't able to determine that based on the wiki, so I don't know. I know he makes appearances later on. I think he becomes sort of one of those, like, because he doesn't obviously die at the end of this, right? So I think he becomes one of those, like, peacetime villains where you're just like, oh my god, this dude's so crazy. So I think he becomes sort of a consistent figure in the comics runs after this. But this is sort of like his big send-off, you know?
Okay. So the other question I had with this comic, and I'm hoping one of you guys can help me. So I understand the concept that the spark is like their soul, and it goes into a car or whatever and turns the car into a robot. Or however that works. But, like, what then makes somebody like Overlord so much more powerful than everybody else? Because, I mean, is it just the luck of what vehicle your spark inhabits? Or is it, like, he can't, like, go to the gym and get swole, right? I mean, is he going to add better pistons onto his cockpit? I have no idea.
They literally go to the gym and pump iron.
Pump iron fist. That's what Barrett is doing.
Injecting iron into their... It's like, they're injecting iron. It's actually just them shooting up. Just like, crazy metals into their vein.
Well, you're talking about how IW is getting more gritty with this.
Actually, I can provide some context to that because I did some reading on Overlord. I've been fascinated with him because I watched there's a new miniseries of cartoons called I think it's like War of the Primes or something. You can look it up on YouTube. I think the Hasbro, basically it's like a bunch of mini episodes, like 10-minute episodes. It's like a series of 10 of them. And then they do a follow-up called Titans Return, which is actually like 10, 20-minute episodes, so they made it a little longer. And Overlord actually shows up in that. You're like, whoa, and he does some pretty ruthless stuff in there, too. So you're just like... So I was kind of fascinated with him after watching that. And I guess those cartoons take place way after this, so kind of jumped ahead. Well, that was sort of like my re-entry point to Transformers, like... because I was trying to be like, I had a local buddy like get me back into it, and so I was like doing some research and trying to get back into it. I was like, oh cool, new cartoon, and the episodes are free streaming, sweet.
Can't so, be that.
Yeah, so I went and just like watched the whole series because it took like, you know, less than a couple hours, and it's pretty sweet. And he has a pretty prominent role in it at some point, so he's kind of cool. So I was like, oh, who the heck is this guy? And then I was reading up on him. He's just like super crazy. So two things. One, he's apparently like one of Megatron's like higher generals, like on par with like Starscream, Soundwave, and a couple of like the top Decepticon brass, if you will.
Yeah.
So he was already kind of there. And I guess like his origins go back to like, you know, the gladiatorial days where like Megatron basically like Megatron essentially earns his like notoriety by like fighting in these like gladiatorial arenas in Cybertron before the war got started. Then he becomes a political figure and a megalomaniac and a zealot, blah blah blah, and starts the war and all that stuff. Overlord was like one of like the higher up echelon gladiatorial fighters in said arena. But Megatron would just like wax them like every time, right? Mm-hmm. So he's like, one, he's got super duper huge hangups on trying to beat Megatron, like in any kind of combat. And two, he has zero interest whatsoever in the Decepticon Autobot war. Like, as soon as war broke out, he was like, all right, I guess I'm a Decepticon. And he was so powerful, so Megatron just like had to use him because it's like, well, I mean, he's a freaking weapon of mass destruction. Might as well just send him off and let him go nuts. Mm-hmm. And he did go nuts. And then at one point, there's a thing Megatron tried to do is called Phase 6, which was he infused like a number of his top generals with like some crazy metal that made them nearly invincible. And they were going to be like a last resort weapon in case they were going to lose the war. And he would send those fuckers in to like basically clean house and win the war. Last resort.
So that's how he's so much stronger. Okay.
The funny part is that a couple of them are some of the highest dissenters in Megatron's army. Starscream, Shockwave, which he's in the cartoon. He's like this purple guy. He doesn't really have an eye so much as he has like a light bulb for an eye.
Oh, yeah,
he
looks yeah, really yeah. Weird.
Yeah, Shockwave's one. And Shockwave in the comics, like in the older IDW comics, is like just like they just have whole runs where he's basically just betraying Megatron and like taking over everything and trying to mess shit up. So he's a dissenter. And then you got Overlord. Also clearly a dissenter based on what we're reading. And this yeah. arc, he's like, you know, he's just like, tell Megatron option two, which is hilarious because he tells that to Cup.
Yeah, like Cup is going to go deliver like the message for him. Gonna,
like, go have a meeting with Megatron. He's like, hey, you know that guy? He said to tell you option two. Nobody's passing that message on.
Yeah. That's honestly, right? I had this reaction. I was like, that's going nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. And then at the end, you find out it really did go nowhere.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, holy crap. That's so funny. He's just really kind of stupid. All right.
Yes, he is.
He's so crazy. He's so crazy. He was just assumed that this was going to like make its rounds, and it just, nobody really cared. So that's funny.
And the only reason they care, the only reason the Autobots even cared at all is because that computer was there. Otherwise, they might have been willing to just let the base go. Or just like assume that it's a Decepticon rolling over other Decepticons, so who kind of gives a shit at that point? Just assume that all the Autobots there are dead, so why bother sending somebody? Like, they went there for the computer.
Yeah, and I don't think they had all the intel until they picked up Impactor. And then it was like, well, we're already on this mission, and we have to do it. Holy crap, this sucks now. I think it was sort of what I'll say, like, okay, Overlord's crazy, but he kind of does his own thing. But they were like, oh, we're going into the den of the lion. We're going to be poking the bear. We have to do this, but this is not going to be good.
Yeah.
Because they knew that they were just messing with the wrong hombre, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Impactor is an interesting addition to this comic, too, because I liked I like the backstory that we got from Iron Fist, and then the real backstory we got later was like, oh, yeah, that's actually fucked up. Like, I'm going to shoot through you without your permission, for one, and then I'm going to murder all of them for another. But then I was kind of disappointed. I mean, like, that's the thing that you do in literature, right? Like, you take a character, and you drag them through the mud, and they can make a bad decision, but then if you give them a chance to redeem themselves or make the decision a second time, if they make the right decision, then they are a hero. If they make the wrong decision again, then they're a villain. But I kind of would have appreciated if Impactor had killed Overlord and been like, you know, maybe what I did before was wrong, but this is the world we are in. Like, this is still the, like, you killed so many people. This is still the reality of the world that we live in. Like, I don't have time for these high-minded morals that Springer's trying to pull here. I kind of would have appreciated not like a lecture from him, but like here with the way he's gone, we got a hard line. This is the moral of the story, and this is the thing that's definitely right. And I think that stark right and wrong, I don't know if it, I mean, that is definitely in Transformers, the idea that you, even in a gray world, you can have right and wrong. That's definitely in Transformers, but it didn't feel authentic that this kind of Transformers, the Wreckers thing, because you did have, like, the funny guy getting shot in the face and other people dying left and right. And this world is a lot more gray than, like, the movie Transformers that we tend to see, which in and of itself is still pretty great. But this is, like, I kind of would have wanted Impactor to kill Overlord. I kind of would have wanted a different decision there.
Well, it's an interesting thing because I think, well, like, you know, the Squadron X, which is the controversial event, mm-hmm. Yeah, the group of Decepticons that he brutally murders after they basically... So, like, I guess we should give it context. So, Impactor basically does war crimes, like hard war crimes.
Yeah.
They kidnap this... They're chasing this group of Decepticons, which are obviously, like, a strategic, you know...
Yeah, I figured it's like the Decepticon version of the Wreckers. That's what I assumed. And they got to this...
Yeah, like
they were chasing them. They finally caught him, but it happened to happen on this neutral planet, so they had to let him go. But Impactor was like, fuck that. I'm going to kill these motherfuckers. Like, we've been chasing them. They're bad guys. I don't care where we are. I'm going to fucking murder the shit out of them.
Yeah, he definitely just, like, took the law in his hands and went, I don't see why we need to do this. Like, all right, boom, done. Let's just... let's call it a day.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go get lunch. It was self-defense, you know.
Kill them and put a gun next to their hand. Just plant the evidence.
Yeah. Sprinkle some crack on them.
Yes. Like in the meme with salt. Just, yeah. That would have been a good panel to draw. Anyway.
That would be great. Yeah. Yeah. So that's a thing. But yeah, I think... By the time he gets to Overlord, and like it's kind of weird because I think by the end there's unwritten or it did what's her face, the human girl, did she make her little speech yet at that point? She did.
Verity,
right?
Yeah, she had. Yeah.
So I think at that point they all kind of realize, like, oh, this guy is literally just worthless. He's not worth the effort. He is a freaking maniac.
Yeah.
He has no real goals, and he's not really a strategic danger at this point. So we should just let him, just let this guy stew in his own misery, because he's not worth it. And I think he could have come to that realization. I mean, I know he was pretty heated and stuff. But I don't know. It's sort of like, you know, when you get somebody that bad and that rotten, it's like killing them would almost be like, especially if there's no real, like, it wasn't like he'd be vindicated.
Yeah.
And it's not like he would be renowned. There would be no renown for it. There would be no glory in it. There'd be nothing. Nobody would know. Nobody would care if he killed him, even though he was this big, bad Decepticon. It's like, he's a big bad Decepticon who, like, at this point, it's pretty well known that he kind of jumped ship, and who the heck knows what he was doing? Like, they even say at some point, like, oh, I thought he was just dead.
Yeah, like, at this point, he's been out of the fight for, like, years, so...
Yeah, like, a long time. So it's like, oh, well, you know. He's an afterthought, and I think it sort of, like, comes back around, especially when they're just like, highlight the fact that it's like, this guy, he's a monster without a cause. Like, he's a, you know, he's not even like a, not even a nihilist, you know what I mean? It's not even like he's got, it's not even like he could convert his purpose to be like something more vile. Like, he's, well, his only purpose has been removed. He's not even a threat.
That's the other side of this too. Like, okay, you're gonna take him in for trial and send him to prison, and then what? In prison, is he gonna see the light and become a productive member of society? Like, what? What's the end game for that? Like we as human beings, when we incarcerate a human being, we always want to believe the chance that the person can become good, because as human beings, and we see other humans, and we see them as complex characters and complex people, not characters, they're real people. And everybody should get that chance at redemption, because no matter how far lost you are, we want to believe, for whatever reason, that even the most lost person can bring themselves back. But in a comic book like this, like, Overlord is an archetype. Like, there is no redemption. This guy is not coming back. Like, he's obviously not just insane. He's completely gone. Like, there's no... Like, you put him in prison, and then you just hope he never breaks out. Hope nobody ever gets him out. Hope nobody... Like, you just put him in there and let him die later. So, I mean, I think part of the reason I not that I wanted him to die, like, in this comic for any satisfying reason, but I'm just sitting here wondering, like, you're just making him die later when he could have died now. Maybe, I don't know, maybe you execute him in a way that is the Autobot way of killing somebody. I don't know, but even that's, like, you're just doing it later, but I don't know.
And I read some of the later IDW, like, I started reading Robots in Disguise and, oh god, what's the other one called? More Than Meets the Eye, which are the new sort of, like, parallel running series that are still ongoing today. And there's, like, it's a post-war environment, right? So, you know, the war's over, there's nothing left, some crazy cataclysmic event. I haven't read, like, up to that point, which I probably should, because I guess there's some important stuff that I should know. But, you know, at this point, they're in peacetime, and they're trying to figure out, like, okay, how do we integrate, like, Autobots, Decepticons, and then, like, a ton of just civilian Cybertronians who just, like, just fled to the four quarters of the universe, and they're all coming back now that the war's over, right?
Yeah.
So it's, like, this, like, really cool, like, theme of, like, gray area, and like, how are these old war guys where, you know, good and evil was very clearly defined, like, how do they handle peacetime, right? Yeah. And I think Overlord being introduced here and not being killed was sort of like a world building thing.
Okay.
So I think them not killing him was sort of maybe a publisher decision, because they wanted to keep that guy in their back pocket.
Okay. Know? Well, in that context, if you take a guy like Impactor and you have him kill him, then it says that Impactor is not post-war. Like,
no.
This, then it paints this comic as being outside that kind of post-war vibe.
Okay. I would say Impactor, and I didn't see him in later comics, so I don't even know if he... Does he survive this?
Yeah. Okay. He totally does. He's the hero.
I haven't seen him reemerge anywhere in any storylines, but I haven't read too far yet either, so maybe he'll show up. But I get the feeling that, like, he's going to be, like, PTSD and then also, like, prisoner of war syndrome.
Yeah.
Basically just forced to fight in a gladiatorial arena and just murder people in cold blood. So I can only imagine if he ever shows up in comics again, like Overlord has, it's going to be in a very interesting... sort of.
Yeah.
He's going to play an interesting role, I think.
Hey, yeah, hey, David, what was your favorite moment in this comic?
Oh, I don't know. Like, for me, this was a bit of a, like, nostalgia trip, but also I felt like there was a lot going on in this thing, in this whole story. My favorite single piece, I don't know. The thing with this comic, I thought, was, you know, sometimes we talk about, like, comics being gritty for grit's sake, and I've kind of got that feeling with this comic, because other Transformer stuff that I've read has not, or also watched, has not been like this. I've read a few issues of the issues that James mentioned about the Robots in Disguise and More Than Meets the Eye. But I didn't keep I didn't keep reading it. So I don't know if I have a favorite single scene in this. I thought the way that the comic wrapped up was kind of cool with the, like, blog entry. I don't know how else to describe it. Journal entry. I thought that was an interesting way of wrapping up the comic, but this was just kind of fast and very frenetic. There's just a lot happened in a small amount of time. That's not really a criticism, more like just an observation. But yeah, I guess if I had to pick one part, it was the ending, and the nostalgia was nice.
Yeah, frenetic's a good word, because the first like two issues, it was like bouncing forward and backward in time, and introducing that character and this character and the other character. And I didn't even know a lot of the veterans too, so I was like, who the fuck is who again? And there's like nine people here, you know. So, I mean, part of that, I thought it was just me not being able to catch up. But now thinking back on it, like once it got to issue three, and the Wreckers got to Garrus 9, or that might have been the end of issue 2, when they got to Garrus 9 and it was like one singular cohesive story going forward, like then it really cleaned up for me. Like, it's, you know, you had the problem of like two or three teams doing two or three different things, but that's a much more manageable story than like this, like forward, backward, this backstory over here, this thing over there, and then here we're at Garrus 9 and this is what Overlayer's been doing, but here's the Wreckers coming in, and oh look, here's Impactor, he hit the windshield, he impacted on the windshield, you know, like like it was once we got to Garrus 9, I was like, okay, cool, we're good now. But the first couple issues, I was like, oh, what's going on here? I don't even know.
Yeah, I'll give you that. They had a tough time differentiating like how they were trying to build up their story. They were clearly trying to build up, and you know, you like it was like at first I was kind of like, oh great, we got a bunch of stuff going on here. Like, what are they gonna do? But they wrapped it up pretty cleanly, I would say. But the setup was very messy. I'll definitely agree with that. It was just like, this is going on here, this guy, and if it wasn't for the fact that like I have a background, I recognized almost all of the veterans, because they were in the Transformers movie, the original one, Ultra Magnus, Cup, Perceptor, Springer, being, you know, very recognizable to me personally. But then like Twin Twist and Top Spin, actually knew those because of their toys. But they had like the worst action figures ever, because that's, I know we're getting into like toys space here, but all they do is they fold over to turn into their vehicle, and then you hit a button and they like spring out and turn into a robot form. So it's like
they just like fold in half.
Yeah,
I had some of those toys too.
Yeah, there was two of them, and they were Twin Twist and Top Spin, right? And those are the only two that ever did that. And like, they were like, okay, this sucks, we're never doing it again, because they're pretty crappy toys. I actually have Twin Twist on my desk, and he looks okay in his robot form, but yeah, his transformation, like as a toy, he's very underwhelming, right? So you're just like, when those two died, it was like, okay. I was like, I didn't feel too bad. I was like, they're kind of crappy toys.
Yeah, and wasn't one of them the one that gave up their spark to start the computer?
Yeah, and in the process, basically suicided both of them.
Yeah,
because they like have like twin linked souls or something.
Which is the one who was like, you know, I'm into cartography, but this gets kind of hard when your soul twin is like off getting all fucked up.
Yeah,
I think that was Twin Twist.
I like Twin Twist because I love that idea of like, I just want to sit at a desk and draw maps. And every time I try to draw a coastline, I get a fucking punch in the gut.
Yeah. Like, I'm sitting at home, and then all of a sudden, I feel like somebody just shot me in the freaking arm.
I'm like, okay, I get why you came out here. Like, that sucks balls for you, but I get it.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty amusing. I mean, that was cool, because at least it gave those characters something interesting to kind of, like, grasp onto.
Yeah.
Because otherwise they're very forgettable.
Instead of, like, joining the Wreckers and going all hardcore, like, military service, I would just try to convince Topspin to do something else with his life, but, you know, to each their own.
My idea was that he tried, and it was just like, he just, tried and couldn't. He went full on Patriot and was just like, all right, well, I guess I
gotta. That ain't gonna happen.
Yeah.
Oh, one thing that I did think was funny was when I first started reading it, I thought, wow, Optimus Prime looks kind of weird. And then later they call him out. They're like, why are you trying to look like Optimus Prime? Do you guys remember that part?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Did he answer that? I don't remember what his answer was.
I don't know.
He was just a big admirer.
That's okay.
And then they would just, like, make fun of him, like, oh, I guess it's not the Optimus Prime two-fold plan or whatever the hell. Like, they kept, like...
That's right.
They kept just, like, making fun of him for trying to look like Optimus Prime and just totally not being an Optimus Prime, clearly. Yeah. That was his whole shtick. It was just like, you look like him because somebody who drew you was probably lazy and... Like, it's almost like the writer just making fun of the artist for making this character who just, like, looked totally unoriginal.
I don't know. I mean, I kind of like that, though. Like, and there's people like that who model themselves over after their heroes, and, you know.
Yeah,
from a character's perspective, I like it, too. And I like that people give him shit for it. Like, you should.
Yeah.
Like, if I went to work cosplaying as, like, a Klingon, yeah, I should get some shit for that.
Yeah, it's just it was an interesting shtick for that character. None of those guys really stood out. Yeah,
but I mean, aside from like character confusion that I think partially was on me from not really being familiar with Transformers, this is a miniseries that ties into the wider universe. So, as like a jumping on point, if you're unfamiliar to start with, it might not be the best idea to come in here. But I was like, it's fine. I'm a savvy comic book reader, and I remember Beast Wars, so I can do this. But like. Aside from the character confusion, once it got rolling, I thought the art did a really good job of like following action from one frame to the next, and I genuinely really liked the art in this.
For
quite a while. Yeah, I feel like it did a solid job.
It was good. It looked pretty good. Yeah, I think another, like, I'll throw this in here with the newbies that was really confusing. Their coloration was all like really similar. I think that was another thing that really...
Yeah, they were all kind of like white, blue, and orange kind of thing going on.
They were just like red, white, blue, and orange. That was it. Like, they took those four colors and then just like randomly like threw it at those characters.
I think that's why I was quick to defend Optimus Prime, because I was able to recognize him in the lineup pretty quickly. I was like, oh, that's Pyro. Cool, got that one. I don't know which one's Guzzle and which one's Iron Fist, but I can recognize Pyro.
Yeah, and then of course to like hit on the point Andy made, like Rotorstorm was just completely unmemorable except for that one smart-ass line and then him getting blasted in the face.
Yeah, but that line was beautiful. Like, I laughed out loud at that line.
I know, I thought it was great, because like, it was like, oh man, he's a combiner, and you're like, no, he's not.
No, not even a little bit.
Just a smart-ass. That was good.
Well, and he had his moment of glory, too, when he landed the pods. Like, that's, you know. What I do appreciate is all these newbies got a moment of glory, a moment of character development, and a good death scene. Not necessarily like an honorable death scene, but a memorable death scene.
That's true.
You know, like, in the span of a 5-issue comic, to achieve that for four new characters and have Impactor's storyline and Springer in there and funny moments with a couple, like, for only 5 issues... with as action oriented as this comic was, it hits a lot of character points, and it goes boom, 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 boom. And it might not do so much development for everybody, but it's a good job of like, if you had a character that you kind of liked, it gave him a moment. And that's tough to do in so few issues. It really is with so many characters. I feel like that was a good achievement there.
Yeah, I feel like they needed almost another issue or two, maybe to clean up the sort of, I don't know, the foundation of what they're trying to do with the story.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a writer, so I could...
Maybe like a 6-issue mini.
Yeah. Give them 6 issues. I don't know.
Then finally, we can have a purpose for Verity.
Oh, God.
I don't know why she was... Anyway. Hey, do you guys want to rate? Go.
Yeah, go for it. Sorry.
No, you go.
Well, I have something I'd like to say.
Okay. All right, there we go.
I actually, J Money will agree with me on this, but I like this characterization of Perceptor, as a, because to me, he's, in my mind, he's the character in the, he's Perceptor from the '86 movie, where he's like the token nerd, Like, he literally transforms into a microscope in the 86 movie. But in here, he's like a grizzled sniper, and looks like the war really took its toll on him. I don't know. I just thought that was interesting.
Yeah, I really liked Perceptor in this. And it's weird because they kind of blend that nerd persona with this persona in future comics going forward, which I kind of like. He kind of, like, in peacetime, he goes back to being like a very, very overly thorough scientist, you know, which is fitting of his character. But he's, yeah, like, wartime, he's just a badass sniper. Yeah, he's like, dude, that microscope. Guess what that is?
Yeah. I forgot that he was in the movie, and I forgot that that's where he was. But now that you pointed that out, David, I really, really love that, because I think that's, like, we started the discussion talking about, like, the fact that this is Transformers as opposed to just, I don't know, like a Sergeant Rock or any other military or war comic, is that it's Transformers, and what does Transformers bring to the table? And I feel like that's it right there. The fact that, like, you can take this character from 30 years ago now and be like, hey, this is what war does to you. Like, he was there in 86, and he was younger, and he was a fucking microscope, and he was a more pure character. But after so much time in the war, this is what you have to do to survive. And this is, if you're one of the ones who survives through the war, this is what you've become. And you grow into this, and you have to adapt your skill set to the battlefield. And he did that, and that's why he's still alive. And I think that's a thing that you can tell in a war comic, but you need a lot of time to do that. You know, like, to try and, like, do that on, like, a television show, that's going to be seasons and seasons and seasons to get that point across. But because this is such a long-running franchise with such a heavy theme of war and battle, you're able to do that kind of message quickly. And in the background, like, I didn't even know it was there until you pointed it out for me right now. But now that you did, like, I love that. Like, that is why you make this comic Transformers instead of, you know, Haunted Tank.
Yeah.
Haunted Tank was cool, though.
No, it was, but I was trying to think of some other random war comic that nobody would remember.
Oh, man.
Well, on that note, yeah,
one more thing to add to
Perceptor. Yeah.
I have his toy, his old school toy. It's fucking awesome, and the microscope actually works.
That's rad.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love that.
So a little bit of trivia there for all you kids at home. Perceptor is a badass action figure, the old school one. Awesome.
Yeah, I don't have too many Transformers figures anymore. I do have a G1 remake of Soundwave, who has always been my favorite Transformer as long as I can remember. I thought it's awesome that he turns into a cassette deck. It's just really cool. I remember I came across it online. Somebody had made a MP3 player, transforming MP3 player version of Perceptor, or not Perceptor, Soundwave, which I kind of wish I had bought when it, you know, but who uses MP3 players anymore? But it was just kind of neat.
Yeah, it would have been as badly time stamped as this old school cassette form.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right then. Stuff. Let's get down and rate this. But before we get into all that, first thing I want to do is, and we're starting to do this we started a few episodes ago, Jay Money doing this, before we gave a rating of these shows, or before we give a rating of these comics, I want to thank the people who made them. I want to thank Nick Roche and James Roberts for writing. And I got these credits from issue 4. And I know that there's other people I've not mentioned, but I'll, you know, Nick Roche and James Roberts for writing it. Nick Roche for doing pencils, and the most Italian name I've ever read, Guido Guidi, for doing pencils and inks. John Wyckoff for doing inks. Andrew Griffith. Joss Burcham, Joanna La Fuente for doing colors, Neil Oyatake for doing letters, Denton Upton, Andy Schmidt for edit, and like everybody up and down the line at IDW and everybody who worked on this comic, like, thank you guys for working on it, because if you hadn't have been in the position to create this, if you hadn't done the work and made it and put it in our hands, we wouldn't be here to talk about it. So regardless of how we rate it, regardless of what we said, positive or negative, like, it's worth it to take the time to thank the people who actually do the creative effort, who make the thing and who put it out there and do all of the things that are required to get in our hands. So I know there's other people that were, you know, credited in other issues, and I'll try to make sure I mention them in the post that I make for this episode. But definitely got to do that here. Always think that people will make it. But now we're going to rate it. And Jay Money, I know you've been on the show before, but I'll recap. We give this a 1 to 5, 2.5 being average, 5 being awesome, 1 being Spawn. And it's just kind of arbitrarily however you want to decide that it's worth your time or not, or whatever rating scale you want to give it on that 5 spectrum, but 1 to 5. And I'm going to go first, kind of set the tone, even though I don't normally. I'm going to give this, I'm going to give it a 3.5. Sure. Why not? I feel like David's word choice of calling it frantic and frenetic. I think frenetic was your word. It was perfect. That was spot on. But once I got into it, I was really into it. Like the first issue, I was like, I don't know. This was a bad choice. But by the middle or end of issue 4, I was like, I kind of like this. I'm really interested to see where it goes. Like this got brutal, but it's interesting. There's some storylines I'm following here. And I really want to know how this goes. And I want to know what a quietus was. And when I was like, calculates guilt? What the fuck does that mean? Like, there were enough breadcrumbs to keep me going and enough interesting story tidbits to make me want to see how the character development wrapped up, especially because there were fucking so many characters. I don't want to see where it all went. So it was a fun enough ride. I don't want to – this was good, and I feel like this was a good Transformers comic, but I feel like it also doesn't hit – you know, it's not literature. And I don't think any part of this is like getting towards being literature, like capital L literature. But as a comic, it's good. It's definitely worth your time. It's fun to read, and the art was pretty solid. Once it settles in. I'm going to go with a 3.5. How about you, David?
I think I'm going to go with a 3.5 as well. This was a, I really enjoyed it. At the beginning, it seemed a little, there was a lot going on in the first couple issues. So it was a little bit confusing, but, once you kind of settle into it, it starts moving at a nice pace. If you are a fan of Transformers, you'll really like this. It's a fun little nostalgia trip, even though but what's cool about it is that, like, there's some recognizable characters, but for the most part, they're new if you've only really watched the G1 TV series or the movies. And, but it was an enjoyable comic. It was a cool story and, you know, it fell into the gritty side a little bit, but it wasn't like dark because the colors were nice and it was easy to see what was going on. But like Andy said, it's not capital L literature, but it's definitely fun. So, I'm definitely going to go with 3.5.
Yeah. Not everything's got to be literature.
Right. Exactly. It doesn't have to be.
Yeah. All right, Jay Money, what do you got?
All right. Let's go with like a 3.75. And I'll try and explain that. So, as a launching point for getting back into new Transformers, it is fantastic. Because if you have some familiar with some old stuff, and by that I mean most likely, like, if you haven't ever watched the old movie, then you're probably just like not really, I don't know, you might be lost. But if you're like, I watched the old movie and then I read this and I went like, oh hey, there's like 4 characters from that movie here. That's cool. So I recognize people. So it's already like I'm able to sort of discern names from faces. Yeah. And then after I read this and I started reading Robots in Disguise and reading what's the other one?
More Than Meets,
Meets the Eye. There we go.
This is 2 halves of the slogan.
I know. I'm terrible. What kind of fan am I? And then so going on and starting to read those, and it's just been great. And I think the quality of those might even be better than this. So I would give this a 3.75 because I'm reading better stuff already. But this is such a good way to be like, okay, I haven't read these before. I don't really know what's going on here. Like, this is a good way to be like, okay, this kind of sets a mood. It's not necessarily the consistent mood for the comics, but it gives you an idea how flexible IDW can be with this brand and with these characters and how they could build a narrative, right? It's a really good example of that. I really admire it for being like, oh, cool, this is fun. I'm an adult. This is a fun adult read. It's got just enough jarring stuff to be like, oh man, but you know, I don't know. It was a pretty good comic. It's not the best comic I've read. And like you said, it's not high brow literature, not by a long shot, but it's serviceable for sure. I mean, that's a really good launching point if you're like, I don't know, you know, like, I don't even know where to start, man. And I think right now until the end of the month, it's on sale. I'm like, places where you could buy digital comics.
So, yeah, I think Jen said on Kindle it was $3.99.
And if you have a Comixology Unlimited, it is free.
Nice.
Yes.
That's where I
bought it on Comixology like last weekend. So I was just like, oh hey.
Perfect timing.
Yeah. It's crazy. Like I read it and then Andy was like, hey, we're doing a podcast about it. I'm like, well, there you go. Yeah,
I think I'm gonna try to find some more Transformers to read on Comixology. Cause it you know, it sparked my interest. Like last night after I finished reading it, I was like, I'm gonna watch the 86 movie, but it was late, so I didn't. But I'm definitely gonna watch it this weekend.
Yeah, I'm going to dig it out of my closet and watch it again, because I was like, oh, man, I got to watch that movie again.
If you enjoyed this comic and or enjoyed Transformers at any point in your life and you have never seen the 86 movie, it's leagues better than the Michael Bay ones.
It's the reason this franchise existed past the 90s.
it's a cool movie. I remember, this is a little bit of a tangent, but I remember when I was a kid, I used to stay with my grandparents a lot when my mom worked, and they used to take me to the video store, and I would constantly rent this and or the G.I. Joe movie, the cartoon movie. I would just always watch the Cobra Law one. Yeah, yes. Man.
Mickey from, the Penguin. What's the actor's name?
Burgess Meredith. Yeah.
Burgess Meredith plays the bad guy in that G.I. Joe movie.
What? The main bad guy in the 86 Transformers movie is voiced by Orson Welles.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah.
It has Orson Welles and Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're just like, who? What brilliant casting person that they have working for them for these two movies? That's so amazing.
It also has Eric Idle from Monty Python in the Transformers movie.
Yep. A bit of weird trivia. Okay, bringing the weird trivia tonight. Transformers Animated, which was like the series that played like about 10 years ago, they had that Eric Idle's character Retgar in it, nice. But he was voiced by Weird Al.
Oh, that's amazing. What's and funny because
if you remember the movie, they're playing a Weird Al song during Retgar's scenes in the movie. So you're like, what? It was like it's so. It's so weird. You're like, what's going on? It's so
crazy. I gotta watch that again because I haven't watched that in like 20 years.
it's fun. That movie holds up. Like, I still enjoy that as a mid-30s adult, you know?
It's a romp. I don't care what a Rotten Tomatoes says. I think they give it like a 57% or something.
Eh, fuck Rotten Tomatoes. They have,
Haters gonna hate, I guess.
You know? Yeah. Anyway, so that is it for this week. If you want to check out our previous 319 episodes, 320 episodes, which is fucking insane, you're going to welcometocomics.com on the right. You click on the button that says past shows. They're all there. I know iTunes only lists like the past 50, but guys, there's a lot more than that. And if you want to see what we have coming up, we have the rest of this series and the next series on that website too. Welcometocomics.com. Welcometocomics.com. Click on the button that says future shows, and that will take you to what we have coming up. In the meantime, if you want to follow me, I'm at Jolly Andy. You can follow the show on Facebook, on Twitter, Welcome to Comics. If you appreciated J-Money, you can find J-Money streaming on Twitch, right?
Yeah, not so much lately. but I don't know.
Twitch, you can go see some VODs.
it's Tom Guycutt. That's with two T's, COG. On Twitch. I don't know. I got some old videos. You watch those and then, you know, yell at me to start streaming again, I guess. I've been pretty bad about it.
That's all right. And as always, if you like the show, go to patreon.com/welcometocomics and give us some support. Like any amount. It's nice. It's just nice. Let us know you care. Anyway, that's it for this week. Next, we're going to read Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, Change is Constant. This is the IDW reboot for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. I kind of wanted to read some of the original stuff, but I figured that's been kind of floating around for a while. And since I was thinking about tying this in with like a nostalgia and new nostalgia vibes, I was like, we're going to go with this one. And Also, when I did a search for like the best Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles stories, this one came up a lot too. So Changes Constant, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. That's next week after we got G.I. Joe and the more fun stuff on the website, all that. But yeah, until then, everybody. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.